Welcome to the Teaming Against Trauma podcast, brought to you by Dorchester Children's Advocacy Center. My name's Brooke Anderson, and I'm so grateful that you're here with us. We'll be talking about the way child advocacy professionals come together to fight against trauma and the effects that it has on children. From these conversations, my hope is that you'll gain a better understanding of the way the Child Advocacy Center model works and leave feeling inspired with action steps that you can use to better understand trauma and prevent child abuse. This work truly takes a team to do. So now, I'm considering you a part of ours. Welcome to the team. Now let's fight together. Human trafficking has become quite the buzzword in our culture and honestly all around the world. Unfortunately, it's the reality in which we're living. Human trafficking is happening and people are talking about it, which is a very good thing that we're talking about it, but it's important that we're equipped with education around this specific topic to know what human trafficking really is and what it looks like in our local area. Yes, it is happening in our local area. Human trafficking is happening everywhere. And DCAC is committed to supporting investigators and survivors of human trafficking in our local counties to stop this horrible crime. In fact, we have an entire program dedicated to just that. So today, you get to hear from some of our staff working the most closely with these particular cases of human trafficking. This episode is in honor of January being Human Trafficking Awareness Month. So without further ado, let's jump in to learning about DCAC's response to human trafficking. Hi, Nicole and Allison. Welcome to the show today.
Hi.
Hi, we're happy to be here.
Yes, I'm so excited to have y'all. Actually, the two of you have been highly requested by our staff. I don't know if you know that or not. But you have been. They have been asking that you guys would record a podcast episode with me. And so I'm grateful that I can make their wishes come true. And y'all are going to get to share your expertise and fun personalities today with us.
We're excited to be here.
So, Nicole, could you start us off by explaining what your role is at DCAC?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was hired on in March of 2020, right before the global pandemic. But I've now been here for almost 4 years, hired on as a CSEC program coordinator. And CSEC stands for the Commercial Sexual Exploitation of Children. And so what that meant to me at the time is coming in and assisting our CAC in providing coordination services for youth who have experienced human trafficking or are considered at risk for experiencing human trafficking. And so that involves a lot of different moving pieces, including intake. We handle the intakes on our own separately, and we will also do our multidisciplinary team staffings a little bit differently. And just the flow of providing services is a little bit different than it looks with a lot of our standard cases that come through our center. So it does require a little more special attention,
right,
and a specialized response. So that is why we had the need for the role. And I understand that before I was hired on, this was relatively new. I think there might have been a couple of years of having a formal CSEC program coordinator on staff, or even just kind of developing that program. But I'm really grateful to have jumped in at a good time where, fortunately, the pandemic gave me a lot of additional time where I could educate myself for throughout that first year, and then dive in with our service providers and really move forward, especially 2021 and on. So yeah, it's been a good ride, and we've learned a lot throughout the course of our time. In fact, I should throw in there too, because this is a conversation that we've had with our supervisors relatively often, even just our title of Commercial Sexual Exploitation of Children. That's kind of the understanding that we came in with at the beginning, that we're focusing on commercial sexual exploitation. But throughout these 4 years, we've learned a lot about labor trafficking, and we've learned a lot about different types of online exploitation that also require a specialized response. So it's really broadened over the past few years.
Yeah. And so through that, Allison was hired when, Allison?
February of last year, 2023.
Okay. And so since that, Nicole, have you seen, since her being hired, have you seen more changes? And like, why was that need there?
Yeah, I think the need ended up arising, one, because of the amount of activity that we were seeing within this program, but also, fortunately, since this is a topic that is receiving a lot of national attention right now, there are grant funds that were available that could specifically meet these needs. And so that opened up an opportunity that if we needed to have someone come along, we could. And so we ended up bringing Allison along. And it's been great because she's been taking on a lot of the family advocacy needs for these clients. And I've been focusing more on the multidisciplinary team pieces. But that's allowed us to kind of split our time in that way and balance some of those needs. And she's also had some really great like initiatives of her own, which maybe conversations for later, too. I know with things that are happening on the internet, that will take probably a whole nother podcast episode.
Yeah, we can do it.
But she's been awesome with having, like, initiatives for prevention and education there, too.
Yes. Yeah. So, Allison, can you speak into that a little bit? What has your role looked like? What's it been like for you? And also, can you explain some of, like, the passion of what got you into this?
Yeah, I can kind of just like start with me moving to South Carolina about a year ago, just because that kind of drove the passion and how I ended up here in this position. Funny enough, I actually didn't even apply to be like the CSET coordinator number two, just because I didn't know it was a position here. But after seeing my resume, just having worked within the juvenile justice system in New Hampshire prior to moving here, you know, it was presented to me as if something I'd be interested in. And I was like, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I've worked with at-risk youth for going on, I think it will be like 10 years. It's just a population, you know, and we'll talk about kind of like what populations more likely are susceptible to human trafficking later on, I believe. But working with families, like Nicole said, the family advocacy piece is something that I've kind of taken on because I really enjoy working like face to face with families and youth. And so that's kind of what my focus has become.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is hard work. Like, I mean, everything that we do at the CAC is emotionally difficult. What would you say, like, what keeps you going?
Yeah, so it's just a very rewarding field to work in. I mean, when we meet with families, we're meeting them on their worst days. So it can definitely be challenging, but being that person that's able to, you know, put them on a path to healing or treatment or anything like that that's what's rewarding. And that's why I think we stay in this work, as challenging as it may be. And sometimes there are cases that we aren't able to see all the way through, which can be challenging. But it's those, you know, those one or two cases that, you know, we come across that really motivate us to keep doing the work we do.
That's awesome. I love to hear that. So before we jump into more, I would love if one of y'all, as the experts in this, just took a moment to define what is human trafficking, just to make sure we're all on the same page.
Yeah, I would be happy to do that. And I'm glad you asked because it is something that we don't talk about enough, about the specific definition of an issue that everyone is talking about.
Right.
So the easiest way that we can communicate the federal definition of trafficking is through a visual, which we don't have through the podcast, but if anybody wants to Google it, it's called the Action, Means, and Purpose Model. So if you were to read that definition, there are a lot of verbs. So that could include the obtaining of a person or the harboring of a person, the transporting of a person, lots of different verbs that could be that action item. And you don't have to be doing all of those things. You could just be doing one of them. So you don't have to be transporting a person. You could be obtaining a person or holding a person in one location. But the means is going to be one of three things: by means of force, fraud or coercion. So force would be like maybe a physical force that you're using against somebody. So I think that that's maybe something that people think of a little bit more often when they think about human trafficking. Maybe physical violence, which would create a power and control dynamic. Or people oftentimes will think of restraint, and in which case that would fall under the force category. There's also that fraud. So that's something that we might see, let's say someone is thinking that they're getting into a modeling business and it's not something that ends up being the case. Or maybe someone thinks that they're coming from a foreign country into the United States to provide money for their family. But when they get here, that's not the case and they are experiencing something that's very different. So that could be examples of fraud. Or coercion would maybe be just different types of manipulation. So maybe mental manipulation of like, you have to stay in the situation because I love you so much, or you need to stay in the situation because no one else is going to be there for you. Mm-hmm. Or even just threats of harm saying, you know, you need to stay in the situation because I know where you live, or I know like how I could access your family if I needed to. So that's different types of coercion too. So you have those actions, those means, but the purpose is going to be for one of two things. It's going to be either for labor or for commercial sex, which means sex in exchange for something of value. So that is going to be like the basic definition, especially when you're regarding adults. But there is one caveat when it comes to minors. When it comes to a minor, and those are the children that we serve, minors cannot consent to commercial sex. Even if there's no means of force, fraud, or coercion, minors cannot, by law, consent to commercial sex. So that is, despite the age of consent in any state, whatever that might be, an individual would have to be age 18 to be able to consent to commercial sex. And depending on where you are in the country, that could be legal, that could be illegal. But when it comes to a minor, it is automatically considered a situation of sex trafficking. So that's been something that's a big education piece for a lot of people, especially when we're working with youth who maybe don't present as being victimized, or maybe they don't present as understanding that what happened to them was not okay or was a trafficking situation, because maybe they thought, you know, this is a way that I'm going to take care of myself. This is a way I'm going to make money, and I'm going to go out on my own and pursue this. But ultimately, it's the buyers who are committing this crime against a minor.
Yeah, and I think it's also really important to also, like, further break down what commercial sex is, too, because it can be so simple, and people don't think of it that way. Like, people hear commercial sex, and they probably just think prostitution. But it could also be something as simple of, you know, an adult trying or giving a minor a ride somewhere in exchange for sex, or, you know, buying them a cell phone, buying them food, buying them or giving them drugs, or any sort of item that's for value in exchange for sex is considered sex trafficking when it comes to minors.
Gotcha. You said that's like the federal definition. Are there other definitions by state, and are there other definitions in other parts of the world?
There are. So our state definition is pretty compatible with the federal definition. I have seen some like global definitions that will include like forced marriage situations and things like that. We'll try to like expand on other situations where someone is being taken advantage of. But it does vary a little bit, but for the most part, it does seem like we have a pretty solid global understanding. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for defining that. I feel like it's really important that we all are on the same page. And that those two words, human trafficking, have really become this buzzword around the world that people are talking about and, yeah, just have so many questions about. And people find so much passion to find justice for these people. So, Do you feel like you agree that that's a buzzword?
Yeah, especially since Sound of Freedom came out. And it's definitely a good thing because more people are aware of the issue and thinking about it, and there more people are wanting to help, which is great. But there's also a lot of misconceptions about human trafficking. You know, we often compare it to the movie Taken. Like, people think human trafficking is, you know, involving abduction and taking, you know, someone off the street, and then they're forced into, you know, sex or labor trafficking or work. And that's just not, that is what it is, but on a much smaller scale. And what we see here, you know, locally is very different.
Yeah. So what is it that we see locally? Like, what would you want people to know is the reality that you're seeing of human trafficking, especially when it comes like to our local area and our community?
Yeah, I can speak to that. So first off, I know whenever Allison and I would talk to someone in public, maybe to share the common question of, oh, hey, nice to meet you, what do you do for a living? And we might share a little bit more about what we do. It's very commonly the response of the persons that we're speaking to just think like, oh, but that's not really happening here, is it? Or just kind of be puzzled, I guess, and not really know what to do with that. But it is. It is happening here in the Lowcountry, in all different parts of South Carolina and the United States. It does look a little bit different than sometimes we might think. So a lot of youth who are experiencing trafficking might have many different vulnerabilities that have brought them to this place. So it could be that they were experiencing a lot of system involvement, maybe had experienced other types of abuse in childhood, and now they're finding themselves in situations where they are on frequent runaway. And if a child is in a runaway situation, that makes them very vulnerable to anyone that they might come in contact with. And so maybe, like Allison was talking about before, maybe that's something of value that someone could offer someone could be just a roof over their head for the night, or a ride from one place to another, or a meal. Sometimes those somethings of value could be providing substances. Or we do see explicit situations of people being connected with someone who plays the role of a pimp. And there are youth that we have worked with that reside in our area that may be set up in a hotel, and someone is having buyers come in and see this youth for commercial sex. So we've also seen situations of labor trafficking in our area, and that can be something that's really hard for people to identify too, because labor trafficking is even more hidden. Where, you know, they could be in industries where there's not a lot of public eye looking into whether or not minors are working, or even if minors are working, you could just think that that, you know, is an appropriate type of work when maybe it isn't, and maybe someone's not getting paid appropriately or not allowed to stop working, or maybe has poor living conditions with that working situation too. So it's hard to explain, because we've seen many different types of trafficking. And again, a lot of these conversations that are happening prior to individuals meeting offenders in person might be happening online too. So we were talking about that online component earlier, and that's been huge.
Yeah. There's also familial trafficking, which involves like a parent you know, setting up their child to have sex in order to get money or drugs. You know, that's things that we see locally as well. And then, yeah, the online portion is huge, and definitely could have an entire episode about that as well.
I definitely want to. Stay tuned.
I'm glad that you said that, though, because that is a really big point as far as, like, what do people not know is happening in the area? Mm-hmm. And familial trafficking is like unfathomable to a lot of people. When folks think about human trafficking, we really do think about some stranger who doesn't have any connection to a child or an adult exploiting that person. And unfortunately, it's far more often someone that the victim knows and trusts, similar to many different types of abuse.
Right, I was just saying that.
Yeah, so it does seem unfathomable, again, that a family member would take advantage of a child in that way. But it is something that we have seen at our center in youth that have experienced that very thing.
Yeah. so that we can be as protective of as possible in our community. Specific to our area, what are some red flags that you would encourage people to know about that they can just be on the outlook for? And then what do they do when they and if they see them?
Yeah, I think it's really hard because I think you hear the term a lot of times, like hidden in plain sight when it comes to human trafficking. Because I don't, it's not just something you see, you know, it's not the handcuffs and the tape over the mouth and the, you know, child being thrown into a car. It's more just like, it's teenagers and it's, you know, kids that are living in homes that seem perfect or, you know, it's very hard to identify, but we do have a list of red flags. You know, like Nicole had said, like runaway youth. Youth are involved in substance use, involved in the system, whether child protection, juvenile justice.
There could be some, like, physical markers of just exhaustion. Like, mm-hmm. if, you know, these youth could be going regularly to school mm-hmm. and still experiencing labor or sex trafficking. So mm-hmm. is this child, like, consistently late or tired or have any physical marks and bruises? Like, those could be indications of many different types of abuse, but definitely a red flag for the types of abuse that we work with in our program as well.
Yeah, and we can also point out, like, you know, kids or teenagers having unexplained items of value, like they got a cell phone and, you know, parents may not know where that came from. You know, getting a lot of different clothing, shoes, just any type of item that is unexplained of where they got it. Those can also be factors to look out for.
And then what do people do if they're like watching this and seeing this, what do they do with that information?
Well, for minors in the state of South Carolina, we would file two different types of reports. One would be to law enforcement, and the other would be to the Department of Social Services. With most types of child abuse, you would only report to the Department of Social Services if the offender was someone within the home. But in this instance, it is actually the only instance that I know of mm-hmm. where South Carolina state legislation changed the definition of child abuse to include human trafficking in 2018. So we filed those reports to the Department of Social Services to create even more wraparound services for youth who've experienced mm-hmm. trafficking and really cover our bases to make sure mm-hmm. that we are taking care of them, investigating, providing follow-up services, therapeutic mm-hmm. services, and trying to pursue justice. So
when you make a report, the offender could be unknown, and it can just be that you have concerns that this child or minor may be experiencing trafficking. And the intake process will look a little different on DSS's end.
So you'd need the child's name and what mm-hmm. the signs, where would you need that?
Yeah, what the concerns are. And identifiable information so that the state could follow up with it.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay. Good to know. And is that, are those reports also the good faith, just like it is for child abuse?
Yeah, I think it's sometimes harder for law enforcement to be able to track something that doesn't have, you know, clear leads, or if there are no disclosures involved or no known information, they will certainly take down that information and try to follow it. I think DSS has a little more flexibility with trying to come in and just gather information when there isn't as much there and there's more of that just bad feeling of something might be going on. We've found that it's helpful for us if we do not have concerns that there is something going on in the home, but we're concerned about maybe something that's happening outside of the home, to have conversations with the parents too and explain to them why we're filing these reports to the Department of Social Services, so that doesn't come as a blindside to mm-hmm. them, or they don't feel that they are being attacked in any way right. For something that they did not do. So yeah, it's a difficult investigative process, mm-hmm. and it's a long road mm-hmm. for youth to feel comfortable making disclosures sometimes with these situations. In fact, Allison talked a lot about the misconceptions about trafficking is always a situation of being pulled off of the street or being bound. And the reason why we don't see that as much is because if that was your situation, it's more likely that when you are freed from that situation, you're willing to talk about it. You know you've been wronged. This was unacceptable to you. Yeah. It came as a shock to you, and you're ready to talk about it. Traffickers know that, and they know that if they play the long game of, I'm going to get to know this person, I'm going to build a relationship and manipulate that in some sort of way. And utilizing those types of coercion of, I will harm you or I will harm your family, it does create more of an internalizing of someone's victimization where they don't feel comfortable talking about it for multiple reasons. They could be fearful or they could be protective because I love this person or I care about this person. They've taken care of me. Or maybe it is a family member that I don't want to talk about yet.
Yeah.
So it's tough.
It can be really challenging too for youth to kind of view themselves as victims sometimes in these cases too, because, you know, they could be under the impression that they were in a relationship with this person that's exploiting
them. They're in love. Like, this is my boyfriend.
Yeah. So it can be very challenging. And that's why we do kind of have a different process here and how we approach cases, because we know that more often than not, children are not ready to talk about it when they first come to us. They need those months of services or however long it takes for them to kind of understand, what happened to them and for them to be able to process it before they're able to engage in like the investigative process.
Makes sense. Yeah. And so can you expand a little bit more on what that process looks like for y'all? Because a lot of what we always touch on the podcast is the MDT process and what that looks like and the different roles that people have in the MDT process. And so I know that you mentioned a few times, and I know that these cases are processed differently. So could you explain kind of what that looks like and why it's different?
Yeah. Nicole and I get the referrals for anything regarding human trafficking or online exploitation. And the first thing we do is we look at them and assess who the parties are that are involved. So law enforcement, is DSS involved? Is the child in the home? Are they in placement? Are they involved with DJJ? And usually our first step is to organize like a team meeting and to meet with the team ahead of time and to kind of, you know, talk about where is this youth now? Where are we at in the investigative process? What background information do we have? And before we, you know, a typical intake process would be we receive an intake and we schedule them for forensic services, for a forensic interview, forensic medical. Like I mentioned before, that's not something that they're usually ready to do right away. So that's why we like to have those MDT meetings with the team players and just to kind of assess where things are at. And then, you know, sometimes we do get cases that we're not as prepared for in terms of like, you know, a normal case may go through the intake process and we realize that there are some concerns there, or we realize like, yeah, this child is not ready to talk today or be in a forensic interview. And so that's when we would, you know, identify what mental health services they need. We have some really great therapists here at DCAC that specialize in providing services to human trafficking victims. So we usually will set them up with services that way. And then once the therapist and that child feels that, you know, they're ready to talk about what happened to them, we'll move forward with scheduling a forensic interview in coordination, you know, with law enforcement and DSS and make sure we have, you know, all the background information we need for that. And then kind of we can talk more about like the ongoing MDT meetings, because those also look a little different than our standard cases. Typically after a forensic interview, we have an MDT meeting that we talk about recommendations and what came from the forensic interview and what next steps are. The CSEC program, we hold meetings separate from the normal MDT just so we can really focus on who's involved. And a lot of times, too, we see a lot of kids from around the state because of a placement that we have nearby that specializes in minors that experience human trafficking. So, you know, we're trying to connect with people across the state, which can be a little more challenging than just working with our local partners, just in terms of, you know, finding times to meet. So we will meet with them on an ongoing as needed basis whenever, you know, new things come up with the case, if there's needs of the child. If there's, you know, DSS or law enforcement has questions, concerns, any things like that, we're able to set up a meeting and meet more frequently.
Gotcha. Thank goodness for Zoom, because that's helped us out a lot. It wasn't how they used to do the CSEC multidisciplinary team meetings, but we really do have so many great state partners and, you know, maybe a DSS caseworker who's up in York County, and it would be really difficult for them to come down here and be a part of an in-person meeting. So it's created a lot of transparency and conversation that's been really helpful over the past few years. Mm-hmm. And it is a very different process. Like, that whole process that Allison was just describing is something that we had to detail out in partnership with Dean Norton Child Advocacy Center. Dorchester Children's Advocacy Center wrote out like a tri-county response model for CSEC cases, just because it is very different.
Yeah.
And one also super important thing that I want to shout out to, since we do have MUSC staff here in our center, that's normally the very first thing that we want to be talking about. Mm-hmm. Secondary to making sure this child is safe and maybe has a roof over their head for the night, if they didn't, then the next step is their body safe? Mm-hmm. Are they okay? You know, like, maybe they're not ready to talk about something, but they may consent to checking in and just making sure their body is safe. Mm-hmm. And having those resources here at the CAC has been huge. Yeah. And we do have a nurse practitioner on staff who has special training in this population, and she's been fantastic of just being able to kind of bridge that gap and meet them in those moments where, like, maybe I'm not ready to talk about it, but it maybe gives a child relief to know, like, if, you know, I need STI testing, then I have access to that. And if I need medication, then I have access to that. Mm-hmm. And we'll start the process of going into therapy and, you know, just being able to check in and allowing them to process what has happened. Mm-hmm. And maybe they'll be able to talk more in a forensic interview setting later.
Yeah, the medicals are huge. I definitely skipped over that, but that's the first step definitely for healing, of just giving that child peace of mind of knowing their body's safe and, you know, getting them any resources that they may need. And it's also really is, even though, you know, children aren't always ready to talk when they come here, it's nice for them to be able to come into our building and understand that this is a safe place.
Yeah.
And the people here are just looking to help them. So, you know, that can make a huge difference too in how we approach cases. So.
And with medical services, with therapeutic services, with forensic interview services, and this is the case across the board just with our CAC, we're never going to push a child to do something that they're not comfortable with doing. So if they don't want to consent to the medical, that's okay. If they don't want to participate in therapy, that's okay. Or if they are even in a forensic interview setting where they thought that they were ready to talk about something, but it turns out it's actually really uncomfortable for them, that's okay. We can pause. We can always revisit later, because we want to make sure that they're comfortable, that they have the autonomy to just determine what they want to talk about. It's their story, and they're able to lead that process.
We definitely adapt to them in each case individually. Like, even though the cases we work are so similar, they're all so different in terms of where people are at, where investigations are at, where, you know, what the individual needs are. And that's one of the really great things about having a specialized program, so that we're able to meet them.
Yeah. And I also know that we're on some task forces for human trafficking. Can you, maybe Nicole, speak into what that looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. So, we attend meetings for the South Carolina Human Trafficking Task Force. Allison and I had a good drive up to Columbia not too long ago to be a part of that. And that's been great, just to know, like, what the state initiatives are. Right now, they're doing a huge prevention initiative called Traffic Proof, and they're introducing some curriculum in the schools. So just being aware of that. Also, we are a part of the Tri-County Human Trafficking Task Force, and Dorchester CAC is proud to co-chair the Child Direct Services Subcommittee of that task force. So that means we're having more conversations about what else needs to be done for this population in Child Direct Services. So we're currently having conversations about reaching out to foster parents and providing either additional training or support for foster parents who are serving this population. And last year, they were able to provide, like, a great training for clinicians who maybe are just in the area, not a part of the CAC, but want to receive that additional training on how to serve that population and provide trauma treatment or evidence-based treatments with those components in mind. Awesome. So it's been great being a part of those additional initiatives and just being able to attend those meetings and see the different agencies across the Tri-County or across the state who are also very invested in this issue and invested in providing education across professionals and also in the public. So we're excited because it seems like we're continuously, you know, picking up pace and gaining more ground, and it's encouraging for the future, especially as the public is becoming more and more aware and more desiring those extra resources and education pieces.
Yeah, because really, like, we talk a lot about how it takes such a team to protect children, and definitely, like, just as I'm hearing all these moving pieces, like, there's moving pieces to all of our cases, but especially in these, there's just, like, so many layers, it seems like, to what's going on and what could have gone on and, you know, all of that. And so making sure that, like, everyone is aware that, like, they can have a part in really spotting these things and catching them, knowing the red flags and stuff. Like, it can be anyone.
Yeah, absolutely. I was able to, through the task force, provide a training for, for hotel staff and then also MUSC students, and somehow that blended to hospital. But for hotel staff and also for MUSC students who were going into all different fields, so not just hospitals, but also maybe people who are going into dentistry or a pharmaceutical school, like, everybody has these different worlds where they might be able to see different things. And even just in their personal lives, having this education is super helpful.
Yeah.
And it's needed, especially when we're talking about it so much and we just don't even know where to go with those feelings that we rightfully have.
A lot of feelings about it. Yeah. Like, it's not hard to get people to buy into, like, this is important. And if we need to do something,
absolutely.
It's just, what do we do?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So it's really important to try to cultivate that. Like, we would never want to, you know, turn anyone away if they were really outraged and concerned about this issue. We just want to make sure that we are providing that extra education to make sure that they're fully educated about what we're upset about. You'll see all kinds of things online about theories of how people are experiencing human trafficking, and some of those may or may not be grounded in facts. But the outrage is understandable, and it's good, and it's a healthy outrage.
And so that's great, right? Leading into, what are some of the resources that you would recommend that people could look into if they want more information?
Yeah, so we actually just recently revamped our resource page on Dorchester CAC's website. So there's, under resources, a link that says human trafficking, and there will be a ton of great websites and information. And some of my favorites are NCMEC, National
Center
Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Thank you. I just say NCMEC so many times.
I know.
What it stands for. They have a ton of really, really great resources. I think people think it's just for missing kids, but they also have, resources for runaways and human trafficking and online safety. And they have resources for the public and then also for professionals. That's a really great resource to check out. And then there's some more, like, through the South Carolina Attorney General's Office. They have a great website with some resources as well. So we went ahead and listed all of those on there for people.
I'll put that in the show notes then, the link to our website for that.
Yeah, one of the resources that we've listed is Love 146, too, and I feel like it's important for us to note that over the past year, we have been able to offer Love 146's, that's a hard thing to say, prevention program, and that's called Not a Number, and we only have a couple of staff currently trained to do that, but we're hoping to expand that, and also with what the state prevention initiatives are, just being able to jump in on that and expand our capacity to do prevention. But that's huge. It's been great just to be able to get youth in a room and have these difficult conversations about issues that they don't always have a medium to talk about. And so that's been awesome and super successful. So Love 146 has had a big impact on our services this year through that prevention program.
And I sat in on one of, or a couple of those trainings just to watch them. And I felt like the youth were really engaged in it because, like, it's interesting stuff to them.
Good. Yeah, these are conversations that they want to have. Like, we want to talk about things that are happening online. Like, even if it's talking about, you know, sending images online or talking about dating relationships, healthy things, unhealthy things. Like, youth are chomping at the bit to be able to have these conversations.
They're experiencing.
Yes, in a safe place where you can be honest about your opinions and we respect one another's opinions and are able to just have that open conversation about maybe what's healthy, what's unhealthy, and try to guide that. So it's been super successful to be able to have that this year.
Yeah. I'm so grateful that y'all are doing that. So with that, with some of the resources and stuff, I mentioned in the beginning about January being Human Trafficking Awareness Month. And so are there any initiatives that y'all know about that you would want people to know about that they could join in on or kind of help spread the awareness specifically this month?
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest things is a National Wear Blue Day on January 11th, which is coming up, and that's just to kind of bring awareness to the issue. And then I think, like, the only thing I would definitely, like, want people to do, especially after listening to this or just, you know, for Human Trafficking Awareness Month, is just to really take the time and, you know, learn more about the issue, especially locally. Like I talked about before, we have a ton of really great resources that can help with that.
Yeah.
And also, you know, utilizing folks' own social media platforms to share those resources is huge, too. Mm-hmm. Because if we're gaining that education, passing on those good educational tools to other people is a great way to spread information instead of misinformation. So that is very helpful. I also want to throw out, since we were talking about the state level task force and the Tri-County Human Trafficking Task Force, or wherever you may be in the state or country, if there's a local task force, there are typically public meetings. Mm-hmm. So feel free to find out when those are and be a part of those. Find out about what is currently happening and make some connections with folks. And if you're looking for ways to get involved, I'm sure that there are ways that people could plug you in. So that could be a great opportunity as well.
That's great. Thank you so much for sharing that. So my last thing that I like to ask everyone is, this podcast is called Team Against Trauma. You don't know. That's what the name is. And so obviously we've talked a lot about the importance, especially when it comes to human trafficking and working with a team and making sure that a lot of people are, you know, involved in the process of these cases, and it's necessary and needed. And so what do you think, I'd love for you both to answer, what you think are some of the most important things, or the most important thing that makes up a good team?
I think, like, as simple as it may be, just communication, but also, like, commitment and, like, staying committed to cases, because it can be really easy to, like, jump in and be like, oh, this case just came in, we gotta do this, this, and this, and then all of a sudden it's quiet, and, you know, no one's continuing to follow up or advocate. And I think that's the biggest thing, is just that team staying connected, communicating where things are at, you know, making sure that, you know, we're helping in the best way we can each other and the youth. So I just say, I like commitment to communication almost.
That's really good.
Yeah.
I really like that. Nicole, what did you say?
So when I'm thinking of a team, I'm thinking of, you know, a group of people who are headed towards a common goal, right? And I think that one of the things that could make a good team or an effective team would just be a real belief in that common goal, like a belief that we care about this goal and it matters to us deeply, and also a feeling of self-efficacy of what we're doing is helpful and it is moving us closer to that goal. We were talking earlier about how the work we do at the CAC can be hard, just emotionally hard, and there's a lot of trauma that we encounter. And as humans, it's obvious that that's going to impact us on different levels. But if we do maintain that belief that this is good work and that when we show up to work, we are making that slow impact, even if it's not changing the world in a day, mm-hmm. but being able to just, like Allison was saying, being there in the family advocacy room, just making a parent's day better because someone mm-hmm. listened to them,
yeah.
or making a child's day better because they were able to just be a child for a day mm-hmm. instead of having to shoulder the trauma that they were experiencing. That does make a difference, and I think that helps us as a CAC anyway to be a good team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. Great responses, of course. Well, do y'all have anything else to add? Any other last thoughts?
Man, you know, if anyone does have any questions about human trafficking, about either commercial sex or labor trafficking, has concerns about red flags, or even mm-hmm. questions about internet crimes against children, which we might talk yeah. about later, you're welcome to reach out to us directly, too. Mm-hmm. We would be more than happy yeah. to connect with you as humans. You can find our contact information on DorchesterChildren.org, and don't be shy. Feel free to yeah. reach out to Allison Morin or Nicole Hoffman. There are three of us.
There are.
So. Nicole. Yeah. I know. I was going to say the same thing. I think it's hard. We're sitting here and talking all about this, but we live and breathe this every day, and it's, like, our world, so it can be hard to, like, slow down and really, like, get all the points that yeah, we want to across. So I'm sure there's things that we may have missed. So if there are like questions that people have, like Nicole said, or you just want to learn more about anything that we do here, or ways you can help, you can definitely reach out. We'd be more than happy to help in any way we can.
And
so.
Even not just as an individual, if you are representing a group, a community group, a school, mm-hmm. a church, even, you know, your HOA, any kind of group that might want to get to know more about this issue, we also provide trainings in the community, yep. and we could gladly mm-hmm. create something that is able to meet your need of what you're trying to learn and come out to you guys, too. So.
Yeah.
More than happy to do that.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. That's so good. Thank you guys so much. I'll also, if you're okay with it, put your emails in the show notes
yeah,
so people can absolutely. Easily get to it.
I don't know. That might be too far.
Too much. Too much access.
No, that's totally fine.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, thank you seriously so much. And I hope you all have a great rest of your days.
Thanks.
Thank you, Brooke.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode on the Teaming Against Trauma podcast. To stay connected, you can follow us on Instagram or Facebook. You can also visit our website to learn more. We'd love for you to subscribe to our channel and leave a review on whatever platform you use to listen to this on. As I've said before, this work truly takes a team to do, and that will help us add more people to our team as we keep teaming against trauma together.